I guess we can start with Kawhi Leonard.
Yes.
What did you make of all that yesterday with a CP-24 helicopter following a car that he may or may not be inside?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been doing this gig for a long time, you know, the sports gig in one form or another for a long time. And I find myself now kind of looking for things I haven't seen before. Because most stuff you see, right? Like somebody wins, somebody loses, you know, crazy comebacks or blowouts or, you know, people having tantrums or any number of things in sport, you kind of say, well, that reminds me of something else. This reminds me of nothing else. I have no precedent for this one. I have no precedent for a free agent athlete, the comings and goings of a free agent athlete being, I'm trying to think of somebody else who's been followed other than like OJ, someone else who has been followed, then that's not a fair comparison, but anybody who's been followed by a helicopter, tracked to a hotel, crowds of people waiting outside of the hotel for a meeting about a contract, about a sports contract, a free agent deciding where to go. You know, like I know, like when the John Tavares thing happened last year, I know there were a couple of reporters down in LA who, you know, hung out outside a hotel where I think the meeting took place. I believe that's where it was. But this is different. So maybe, you know, maybe that tells you where we are in terms of the Raptors and Toronto and Canada and media. And you know, maybe it tells you that we're operating in a bit of a vacuum right now because there's nothing else that's distracting anyone on the sports front particularly. But, yeah, we are in a different place. So mark this one down because, again, I'm guessing you could go another 30 years and not see this.
As weird as it is, as someone who's been waving the We the North flag in here for a couple years, part of me was like, oh, this is for a basketball guy. It's not even for a hockey guy. I was actually happy that basketball has got to this point that it's driving people absolutely insane.
Yeah, it has gotten to this point. And it may stay at this point for a while, especially if he does re-sign with the Raptors. But yeah, it is. That conversation, you know, the conversation around that team on the run to the championship and now the conversation around Kawhi has crossed over. Like, I'm not sure. I think we underestimate what the hardcore basketball audience is in Canada. I think it's larger than we tend to assume sometimes or have assumed. And I think, you know, we kind of assume a lot of things about where hockey is in the hierarchy versus basketball in Canada that might, you know, generationally might be changing. But, yeah, I guarantee you that there are a huge number of people in this country where if you said the word Kawhi to them, they would have a reaction, you know, and a significant number of those people are on the edge of their seats right now, you know, thinking that this is the entire future of their favorite team, you know, hangs in the balance, hangs in the, between the ears of a guy who gives nothing away, who is a cipher and a mystery, whose intentions are unknown even to his immediate family. As a story, it's kind of a fun story, but yeah, no, I think you're right. This is where we are right now. You know, the Toronto Raptors and the best player in their history, and you know, one of the best athletes to ever play in Canada, are at the absolute forefront of the sports conversation right now for pretty much everybody.
No, I don't want to be negative on it because I certainly agree. But if Kawhi were to hypothetically leave Toronto,
yes.
How much of that momentum is lost? Like, do you find people in Calgary caring about a Raptor game in November if Kawhi's gone?
No, it's the, you know, it's like the Blue Jays, right? It's the Blue Jays 2015, 2016 versus the Blue Jays, you know, maybe right now. Although, you know, there's still kind of a healthy TV audience and there still is a conversation about the young players or about how badly they played at the beginning of the season or, you know, any number of things. But yeah, it changes. And the Raptors post Kawhi, if he walks away, change and the discussion changes. But, I think there'll be a part of, you know, there are going to be people who say, well, you know, do you tear down or not tear down if that happens? Look how much cap space they could have in 2 years. They could sign, you know, Giannis at Antetokounmpo, right? He's potentially going to be a free agent 2 years from now. They would have as much money as anybody to spend on him. I think it's not kind of one and done, I guess, is what I'm saying. That this is not just that this little window, that this big window opened around Kawhi and around the championship run, and then it's going to all go away and we're going to go back to the way it was in 1968. We're not. This is a new reality we're dealing with here. And, maybe not everybody in Calgary would be talking about it in November if he's gone, but more people in Calgary will be talking about it in November if he's gone than would have been talking about it a year ago, and a year from now, even more will be talking about it. I think we are seeing a pattern here established and a change. And again, that doesn't. I know some people kind of find that notion threatening because, you know, Canada is a hockey country, and there's this only this one basketball team in Canada, and what does that mean if you live in Regina or Vancouver or Montreal or Halifax? But I look at the growth of basketball interest among people who are younger than me, and you know, the notion of being kind of players in a global sport and like the Kawhi story is not just a story in Canada. You know, go to the ESPN website right now and look at the front page. You know, we in Canada are now part of a global sports story. I think Canadians kind of like that. You know, I think that's attractive to us in some way. So whether that means that the assumptions you have made about which sports stand where for your entire lifetime are shifting, and if that, you know, and again, that's a bit unsettling. You know, I know it is for some people, but I think that's what's happening.
Chatting with Stephen Brunt here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Shifting gears to the Blue Jays, Marcus Stroman may or may not be starting for the Blue Jays tonight or ever again. If I were to set the number at 0.5, are you going over or under Marcus Stroman starts in a Blue Jays uniform for the rest of the 2019 season?
Well, if he starts tonight, there's one.
Yeah.
Right? So, I don't know. He's got this weird left shoulder. I've never heard of this injury before. You know, he is right-handed, and he's some kind of a cramping thing in his left shoulder. So I don't know what that means. I do know that they're not going to send him out there if he looks damaged, because this is all about, you know, this is all about showcasing the merchandise. You know, that's what we're talking about here. And all, you know, the well-being of the player and all of that, and trying to be competitive, sure, but you know, really, they want to put him out there in the shop window and make him look as good as they possibly can. Because I would think if he was healthy, I would say this is his last start. The deadline's not till the end of the month, and you know, you could play against that deadline, obviously. But you know, for a contending team, you want as many starts. If you're going to give stuff away, you want to get as many starts as you can. So I, you know, his value kind of, not that it diminishes tremendously, but it will diminish a little bit with each passing week. So, I think they've got a great opportunity here. And I know it sounds weird to be trading away a guy who is exactly the kind of guy you need, but that's where we're headed. And they have an opportunity here to kind of lead the market. I'm not sure, there are some other, you know, Madison Bumgarner's out there. There's some other starters who might be available, but you know, Marcus Stroman has had a great year. He has been, you know, historically very good in big games. He's pitched in the postseason. He's pitched in the World Baseball Classic. He can handle the spotlight. He kind of likes the spotlight. And, you know, he's just in his prime right now. You get a season and a half out of him. That's a pretty attractive commodity. They should score. And if they don't score in this trade, you know, again, and a lot of people have said this, but it's true. This is a big one for this front office. You know, they've done some good things, and I think people are starting to understand some of the good things they've done. They didn't get a lot for Jay Happ, though, and you know, different situation, different pitcher. They certainly didn't get a lot for Josh Donaldson at the second deadline. Different situation, different player, guy who hadn't played all year, but a guy who's having a pretty nice year in Atlanta right now. They got to get something back here. You know, this is blue chip territory. You don't want maybes, and you don't want lottery tickets. You're going to need some talent that's going to be playing for the Blue Jays in the next year or two.
Stephen Brunt's our guest. Stephen, does it change the big league trade market this year, knowing there's only the one deadline? Like, is it more advantageous to trade Stroman now as opposed to waiting? What does that do with the no longer existent waiver, non-waiver deadline and just one hard deadline on July 31st?
Yeah, I think it is going to change. I think we're going to have something more akin to, you know, trade deadline frenzy in other sports. I think it's going to be, you know, again, it's to a team's advantage to do it earlier to get more value. But, I think it is going to change. Like, no one ever understood that August deadline. I'm not going to try and explain the difference either, except for the fact that, you know, you did have to get a guy through waivers. But, you know, some big players changed hands at that August deadline. Justin Verlander changed teams, you know, at the August deadline. So, you know, you could get a guy through, but this is going to focus it. And, you know, there's not going to be that kind of that mystery of whether a guy can get through or, you know, and it's going to look, if this had been the deadline last year, the Blue Jays would not have been able to trade Josh Donaldson because he had not declared himself healthy yet. You know, whether he was healthy enough to play at that point, that's an interesting debating point, I'm told. But he had not declared himself healthy, and you can't, you know, you would be trading damaged goods. You'd be trading a guy who hadn't played almost a whole season. So, yeah, I think we're going to have a very intense 3 weeks here, or 4 weeks leading up to that deadline. And, whether it starts now, I kind of think, you know, All-Star break is a time when it also makes sense to do those kind of deals.
Another part of this conversation was supposed to be Aaron Sanchez. This one more for performance reason than anything. That's not going to happen. Ken Rosenthal with a couple tweets yesterday suggesting outside chance the Jays might even send him down to get another year of control on that player. How did this take such a turn with a guy who was the ERA champ just a couple years ago?
You know, it's a hell of a question, right? I read that Rosenthal tweet yesterday. I was thinking, if the Jays did that, like, I imagine the conversation with Scott Boras. Imagine that conversation. Logical thing to do at this stage, wouldn't it? Like, send him down. He's pitching. He's been awful. You know, by numbers, he's one of the, you know, one of, if not the worst starter in the American League right now. You can make a legit case to send him down. And obviously, that extra year of service time could come in very handy. But my God, Scott Boras, there'd be an eruption at his office. That it would be. I would not want to be Ross Atkins taking that phone call. And I doubt that they will do it. But you know, there's loads of logic there in terms of what has happened to him. You know, it's. I think what people are saying, which I think is slightly unfair, is that the year of the year he won the ERA title is the aberration. You know, is the fluke, and everything else is the real guy. You know, the control issues, which definitely have been a thing for Aaron Sanchez for most years of his career. Even when he was in the minors coming up, he had trouble throwing strikes consistently. But watching his last few starts, he just seems so fragile emotionally on the mound that if anything goes wrong, he falls apart. And, you know, the velocity's down a little bit. You know, you can see things. I know mechanically he's a mess. He's been trying to kind of find what he had before. He's been looking at film of himself. But what was the game against the Yankees when he got hit by a comebacker in the ankle and was rolling along, and then, you know, they had to come out and look at him. He said he was fine, and he immediately fell apart after that. You know, it's just, I think it feels like that if anything goes south for him in a start now, his confidence is so shaken. And Aaron is a very confident kid. I know him pretty well. He's a very confident guy, but he doesn't look like the same person to me, you know, and I can't tell you what's happening mechanically with him. But I think that whole stretch when, you know, when he didn't know whether it's, you know, the finger would get through a start, you know, or when it would go, the weird injury, the finger injury he had last year, that whole series of things seemed to have robbed him of the, you know, that belief that anytime he could go out there, he could dominate. And, you know, I talked to him in spring at length. He was feeling great. His arm was feeling great. He said all the right things, but when I, you know, right from the beginning of this season, it's just that sense that, you know, if something goes wrong, if a play isn't made behind him, if he isn't feeling 100% right, he starts to, you know, looks at his hand, and it's just, you're laid bare as a starting pitcher. You're standing on a hill in the middle of a stadium in front of tens of thousands of people. Everybody's looking at you, and you know, I feel for the guy. I feel for the kid, and Pete Walker's a really good pitching coach. There's some good people in this organization. I think that they are absolutely at a loss as to what to do with him.
Now, it almost
a long answer, but like I have no idea what you do with him now. I don't think they know what they have. I don't think they, you know, I think they're unsure about putting him in the bullpen because they're a little short of starting pitchers. He has zero trade value right now, like none. So you could give him away, but why would you do that? This is not the way anybody thought this season would play out with Aaron Sanchez.
Kind of final one for you as we wrap things up on the Blue Jays. You know, we talked to you on Tuesday about Kevin Biggio.
Yeah.
I know the pace in June is certainly impossible to keep up because nobody hits 10 home runs or has an average over 400 every month. But what Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is doing since he got called back up in late May, it's quite ridiculous. Like, when you look at it, and he's second in the American League in wins above replacement behind only Mike Trout.
Yeah,
you kind of have to read that twice because it's really hard to believe. But this kid is really playing some really good baseball right now.
He's a pleasure to watch. Now, you know, remember he was on a hot streak last year before he got, and then he got hurt. Right, he had that extra base hit streak going.
That's right.
So, you know, I think the question right now is he? Does that mean he is a streaky hitter? And we're seeing a hot streak now, and a cold streak will naturally follow. Like, you know, sort of like, though, you know, Randall Grichuk hasn't been hot much this year, but, you know, Randall Grichuk is incredibly streaky, and that you kind of live with that. You know, you wait out the cold streaks because you know a hot streak's coming. But I think there's it's possible with Gurriel that, you know, he's still young, you know, he's still pretty raw. The transition from Cuba to the major leagues can be tough for some guys for a bunch of reasons, but. I don't think he's going to keep up the Mike Trout pace necessarily, but you know, if you watch him hit, he does a lot of stuff right. You know, he's even taking some walks now, which is something he did not do at all. You know, he looked like a Teoscar Hernandez kind of free swinger. You know, he seems to be learning, and you know, athletically, again, I think they always knew that he was a great athlete. They just didn't know where to put him. You know, they didn't know where he would settle in. And, you know, and the temptation was to put him in the infield because to take advantage of his athleticism. But, you know, it's kind of like they put him in left field. He could forget about having to make that throw to first base. He's turned into a pretty good left fielder. But he just looks so relaxed and so confident. I'm not sure he's going to turn into a pumpkin here, guys. I'm not saying he's, you know, the next superstar. But I think he's, you know, I think they have found themselves a very, very good baseball player. There's everything I see tells me that he is a very, very good baseball player who is just, you know, and they signed him into a long-term deal, right? They signed him. So, you know, this front office gets punched around for some things. This is one maybe people should be giving them some credit for, because it looks like a very savvy move right now. And, you know, it may have been tied into the, you know, remember the signing of Kendrys Morales, which a lot of people wondered about. They signed these two guys at the same time. They have the same agent. And there were some people who thought it was a package deal, that they took that, you know, that they signed Morales and gave him that contract in part to get Gurriel. So if that's true, again, you know, they had some dark days with Kendrys, but maybe it was worth it.
Moving into the CFL, I already asked a betting type question, but tonight Hamilton 12.5-point favorites over Montreal. How big would that spread have to get before you're comfortable taking Montreal? Because 12.5 feels almost insulting to Hamilton.
It does. Yeah. Like, it does. Like, what was that, home field? You know, is that there's some great advantage to playing in a half-empty Molson Stadium? Like, you know, Hamilton should have beaten them by more the last game, you know, and beat them comfortably. Could have beaten them by 40. You know, and again, that's where we are in this league right now. You know, there's a couple of teams that are really, really terrible. But, yeah, what 20? You know, I might, you know, would I be tempted to take the Owls plus 20? I still wouldn't sleep easily if I did that. Let's put it that way. It's not good for the league, right? This is a bad thing to have a team that bad. And again, you guys may have noticed that one of the potential owners, you know, who, whether he was real or not, withdrew himself from the, and I'm putting this in quotation marks, competition to buy the Owls this week. So they are, they're kind of orphans right now. We'll see when they play the Argos. We'll see what happens. You know, somebody's got to win. But that is a huge mess in Montreal right now. And you know, Randy Ambrosi's has done some really good things as commissioner. But this is one. He's in the same bind that guys like Tom Wright were back in the day. You know, you can put as much lipstick on this pig as you want, but you've got a huge issue here when one of nine is as bad as these guys are and is ownerless. And, you know, we'll see if he can kind of pull a miracle here.
I was going to say, I don't think the other eight owners are loving to pay their debts either.
No. This is, you know, and plus you're trying to hustle an expansion franchise to guys in Nova Scotia. Like, it is hard to kind of talk guys up on the virtues of owning a CFL team as a business when, you know, when one of these teams in a much bigger market is dead as a doornail. So, Randy's got to get this one cleaned up quickly, but I don't think anybody's going to take that team on this season if it means taking on the losses from this season. Mm-hmm. You know, someone's going to want to take that team on if they do at the end of the year, clear of debt and clear of this year's losses. So as you suggested, that means that, you know, eight other teams are going to be dividing up not just whatever the debt is there that was left behind, but whatever they're going to lose over the course of this season. So that's tough to take if you're, everybody other than Saskatchewan operates on pretty slim margins in this league.
Stephen, we're having this conversation a day earlier than normal. I'm sure you'll be glued to the hot dog eating contest today. But aside from that, what are the weekend plans for Stephen Brown?
Well, you know, it is strangely frigid here right now. It was 7 degrees this morning when I woke up. So if it warms up a little bit, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Joel Plaskett's playing at our little theater on Saturday night. Ooh. So I'm going to go see Joel Plaskett.
Sounds like a pretty good way to spend the weekend.
Yeah, yeah, he's one of my faves. And seeing him in a small venue like this would be very cool.
Absolutely. We kept you long enough. So thank you for this, and have a great weekend.
All right. See you guys.
Stephen Brund.